that running a veterinary business can sometimes feel like you're fighting your way through a jungle of financial insecurity, HR nightmares, and overall business confusion. Our goal is to give you the ideas and tools you need to not just survive in this jungle, but to thrive in the veterinary industry. By combining over 50 years of knowledge and experience with differing opinions and a little humor, we will help you get the information you need to make the best decisions for you and your veterinary business. Welcome to the Veterinary Survival Show with veterinary CPA and certified financial planner Mark McGaughan and certified veterinary practice manager and practice owner Jenny George.
Welcome to today's edition of the Veterinary Survival Show, podcast for the thriving and surviving veterinarians of the United States. I'm here with Jenny George, CVPM, practice owner of Deerfield Veterinary Clinic. This is Mark McGaughan, CPA to the Veterinary Stars. We've had a long hiatus. I couldn't speak, had a vocal cord issue, not like Adele, but mine was non-surgical. Today, we're kind of re-energized. I spent a grand total of 8 hours at VMX. Jenny spent days and days and days at every CE conference held at VMX. So she's re-energized. I'm re-energized just from going to the beach in Florida.
There you go. It takes all different things, right? Learning, relaxing, rejuvenating. It's all important.
So what are we going to speak about today, Jenny? Culture.
So I think it's funny because I remember years ago, culture was kind of a buzzword at these conferences, right? I remember going and listening to how you can make your culture more like Disney and Starbucks and all of this stuff. And then for a while, we really didn't hear anything about it. And all of a sudden, it's kind of back again. And you hear this word culture. So we were traveling there. I traveled to VMX this last time with one of my CVTs, receptionist, one of my vet techs, and then my husband joined us a little bit later. On the way there, we're all dressed in our matching DVC coats with our DVC bags. Every year, I get the team a new kind of apparel. We have hats, we have sweatshirts, we have all the things. And my CVT was like, we're kind of a cult. Now, I did look up the definition of cult because I went to a talk and it said, you can't have culture without a cult. The actual definition of cult, it's not really good. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object, or a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister, or a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing. So let's take that part away. Let's take away the craziness.
Well, I think if you take away all the bad connotations and you extract all the good connotations, having all the good features of a cult is good.
Right? Like a really close-knit community.
Fanatical devotion. Well, not fanatical.
Maybe not fanatical, right?
I think that's the bad part.
But it is devotion, right? It is a small group of people in a community that really rely and trust each other. I'm not encouraging by any means blind trust in an unhealthy way. But I do think that there is something to being such a close-knit community and really all working towards a goal, okay? So cult, gang, there are so many negative words out there, I think, that relate to this kind of thing. But in reality, I think the whole idea of like, once you're in this group for life. I don't recommend like getting matching tattoos, although that was brought up. There was a booth that was doing free tattoos. And immediately my team was like, oh, we should go, which would have been fun. But they had a really long line and one tattoo artist. I'm like, that man is going to be so busy the whole time. But I mean, how does that sound that my team wants to have get a tattoo with their boss that matches? Is it crazy or is it that we have a good culture?
It's kind of crazy.
But not in a bad way.
I mean, you brought up a bunch of good topics. You can have t-shirts, jackets, hats, tattoos that profess your love for your workplace, but those are kind of all extraneous. I mean, the culture is really inside.
The fact that we have a culture where my team wants to do those things. You're right. That's extra, right? That's not the key to having a good culture. It is the extra part that my team is so comfortable that they want to proudly announce where they work everywhere they go. So we spoke in October. I think that was like at the beginning of your throat issues, really.
Yeah.
But we spoke in October at a practice manager symposium. We were there with Dr. Peter Weinstein and Monica Dixon Perry. And I remember a lot of people asking about firing people. And at the end of it, there was a questionnaire of like, what do you want to learn about? And there were people who said, I want to learn how to have that conversation, how to better fire people. And I thought, holy cow, what's happening? Like, why are we firing so many people? Then I go to VMX and I go to a talk with Dr. David Nickel, who is just a spectacular speaker. And he said, how many people have toxic team members or employees? And the majority, and I'm talking like 90% of this huge room raised their hands that they have toxic employees. And I'm thinking, this is a bigger problem, right? This is not just a problem with, okay, we have one bad fit. It's a problem. And I really thought about it. Mark and I were talking before we started recording. In 16 years, I have fired 4 people total. Now, I'm not saying that more than that haven't left, that some leave for other positions, some just leave of their own accord. And 2 of the people that I say I fired, I didn't really fire. 1 left. It was very amicable. So 1, yes, I did fire. So we'll say 3 people. 1 kind of realized it wasn't a good fit. We realized it wasn't a good fit. Like that was that. The other one, she didn't realize it wasn't a good fit, but we did. She's much better off now. 1 I fired because they stole from me. 1 I fired because they broke our confidentiality and social media policies. So 2 with very just cause. What happens if your culture is so good that 1, you're not hiring warm bodies that don't really fit, and then therefore you have to fire them, which goes back to the fact that your team is willing to work harder so that you don't have to hire those warm bodies. Like they're willing to work harder to say, no, we want you to find a good fit. And then 2, the culture is so good that any new hires that come in are retained. I have another team member who's celebrating her 10-year anniversary next month. I think I have 3 this year. 10 years. And they say the average lifespan of like a technician is 4 to 5. So it really keeps coming back to what is the culture of your clinic.
Yeah, but you keep saying it starts. That's like the key word. As we always say, before we got on the podcast, we were talking. If somebody 10 years into their practice is saying, oh, we've got to get a better culture, maybe that means they never had one before. And on day 1, they should have determined what their culture was and only hire people that fit that culture. But if you're trying to go and put a square peg into a round hole all of a sudden, 5-10 years out, even a year out, I think you've kind of done yourself and the employees that you've hired a disservice because you're backtracking. I mean, you didn't have good upfront processes. Like you said, it didn't fit our culture. We had a social media policy that somebody brought. I mean, you have all good things to guide your culture. Most people don't. And I think when we talked before, people, their why for why they want to own a practice or manage a practice, they don't know that. And they're just doing it for maybe the wrong reason. We see owners all the time that shouldn't own a practice. They just shouldn't. They're great technicians. They may be great with pets, pet owners, employees, but it's not their guiding principle to be the culture leader. And if it isn't, then you better find someone that can lead your culture. And then you can by delegating, you've fulfilled your role. I can't do it. I'm not good at it. But I found someone else who can do it. But you just can't let it sit by the wayside and 10 years in go, oh, we need a culture because I want to fire all my employees. It's hard to remake your practice 5-10 years out. Every day we get people emailing that want to work with us. And some of the emails are like, we're barely surviving. We have marginal employees. We get bad reviews. I'm like, whoa, something isn't wrong today. It was wrong 15-20 years ago.
That's kind of a lagging indicator, right? Of your dumpster fire that's been raging.
Now it's a dumpster fire the size of your small town.
The dumpster has overflown. So I think we're to point number 1. Your culture has to start with leadership, right? And I think what you said about like, what's your why? If you are in a leadership role or own a practice and your initial thought was, I want to do this because I don't want to be told what to do. I don't want to listen to other people. This is your reality check. When you are in charge, when you are a boss, when you are a leader, I don't care what you see yourself as, medical director, hospital administrator, practice manager, head technician, whatever that is, you're going to listen and hear a lot more than you did before. And it's important that you do. So if you're getting into it because you don't like being told what to do, I have worked for that guy. Okay. I have worked for that guy who was an island unto himself, that didn't want to listen to anybody, that would argue just because you told him maybe that what he was doing maybe wasn't the best, even though he knew deep down that it wasn't the best, he would still argue just for the sake of arguing because he didn't want to be told what to do. And I've worked for that practice. And I will tell you, it was toxic. It was toxic. I would not have stayed long term. People there literally have PTSD from working there. I mean, being fired for stupid things. There was no safety net. There was no nothing. And he, great clinician, loved the medicine, great mentor for Simon, but toxic work environment. And I think the main reason that he wanted to own his own practice was because he was stubborn and he did not like being told what to do. That is not a good reason to be in leadership. That is not a good reason to own a practice. Figure out what your strengths are, but that's not a why, right? What's your why? When Simon and I started the practice, and we talked about this a lot at VMX because he was there and we don't often go to conferences together. He always likes the clinician, the CEs. And I'm like, I need you to go to these leadership ones with me because I'm not the only leader here. You are. And he's sitting there and he goes, wow, we really don't talk about what's our why? Why are we doing this? How are we doing this? And if you know your why, if you really know it and you say, okay, my goal, our goal when we started the practice was we wanted to do things differently. We wanted a place where our team could have fun, be friends, be friendly to each other, and knowing that that would go on to our patient care and our client care. But our main goal was always to just make veterinary medicine fun and be a fun place to be. If your team doesn't know your why, then you have failed. Now, just because you failed doesn't mean that it's over. Just because you're 10 years in and your culture is a dumpster fire, it can be changed. It can be changed, but it starts with leadership. So number one is, what's your why? Knowing what your why is and making sure that your team knows what your why is. Because if you're not getting that out there and those people who are working with you don't know what your goal is, what your why is, and they're not on board with it, exactly what you said, right? Round peg, square hole, or whatever. But if they don't know what your why is, maybe it's not in line with their own personal integrity. And if it's not, that's okay. Then that's not the person that you want to hire. But that should be something you're talking about when you're hiring people. Here's what we do. Here's why we do it. We're passionate about this. Can you be passionate about that too? And you're going to get a feel for it pretty quick, but you have to know what your why is and you have to do the work. You have to put that time in to really looking at, why am I in a leadership position? Why am I owning a practice? Because if you don't know, you're in trouble from the get-go. I also think that going along with that is you have to be brave. We've talked about risk-taking. You have to be vulnerable in the fact that you're brave, right? You have to know that you're going to fail.
Yeah, but that's it. I get calls all the time about people who have failed and they're not using it as a learning experience. They're using it as a punitive experience. So they feel bad that they hired the wrong person. They feel bad for the person that they hired as well, but they could have prevented all of this if they knew everything on day one, why they were hiring this person, and if the person knew why they were being hired and the goals met.
Right. And I think a lot of it, what you just said, is taking that failure and just beating yourself up about it. That is nobody any good.
That's what CPAs do. They beat themselves up about failure. You can be right 99.9% of the time, but that 0.01% kills you.
See, and you're a numbers guy. So you should know that 0.01% is minuscule.
It is.
We all fail. And that's part of the vulnerability, right? I'm also listening to Brené Brown. So that's a Dare to Lead. Great book so far. I'm really enjoying it. And it talks about vulnerability. She talks about vulnerability. And we think of vulnerability as a weakness. But the reality is you cannot be brave. You cannot be courageous. You cannot take risks if you're not vulnerable, because you're going to fail. And we don't learn from a place of comfort. We don't learn when everything's going great. I learned so much when we first opened our practice and we had a baby, basically got fired from our positions. We're in the middle of a lawsuit. Talk about a dumpster fire. Like, I really was ready to just be like, this is a horrible idea. We should just forget it and go back to Colorado and we're done. But we fought through it. And I learned so much about how I didn't want to treat people, about what I needed in my employee manual and my confidentiality agreement, like the logistics part of it. I learned so much. Did I fail? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But that difficult time, that time when I couldn't even eat, I was so stressed out. I wasn't sleeping. Like, it was awful. But that's when I grew. That's when I learned. That's when we said, you know what? We can do things differently. That's being brave. That's being vulnerable. And as a leader, you have to be willing to not just put yourself out there, but then to also let people know. Let people know, hey, I screwed this up. It's okay. And I'm going to learn from it. And I'm not going to make that same mistake again. Right. So you hired the wrong person. Okay. What did you learn? What's your interview process? What kind of behavioral questions did you ask? How did you assess this person to know if they were a good fit or not? Change it. Change is scary, but you can change it. So I think that being brave and being aware of the fact that you are going to fail, even if it's 0.01%, it's okay. Learn from it though. Don't dwell in it. Don't be in this negative space of like, it just sucks you down because, oh, I'm so horrible. I can't hire anybody. I should just give up. That's not a good place to be. Like, okay, I'm sitting here. I'm looking at Mark right now and he has his drum sets behind him. How many times did you fail when you were trying to learn how to play the drums?
I still fail.
0.01%?
No.
More than that?
100%. And then it slowly ratchets down over time with practice.
Right. It's called practicing medicine for a reason. I swear everything should be called practicing. We're practicing owning a practice. You're constantly going to make mistakes.
Well, if you practice and don't get it, and you keep practicing and don't get it, find someone that can help you. I mean, everybody needs a little assistance. So whether your practice manager can help you, consultant can help you, attorney who does HR consulting. I mean, find somebody that can help navigate what you're looking for.
And be aware that you can learn from everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. You can learn from your team. You can learn from other industries. You can learn from other professionals. I learn from my children on a regular basis. Maybe not things that I want to learn, but I learn from them. So I think being open to learning is another key thing in leadership. And if you can get that down, if you know your why, if you're brave and vulnerable, you learn from everybody and you're taking good care of yourself. I think that's the last portion of the leadership part that I wanted to talk about. I went to the ethics division of VMX and they talked about it is your ethical responsibility as a veterinary professional to take care of yourself so that you can take care of your patients and your clients. And I'm going to say that again. It is your ethical responsibility to take care of yourself so that you can take care of your clients and your patients. And I think we aren't great at setting boundaries. And I think we're a very caring profession. We give of ourselves and give of ourselves and give of ourselves. And you're pouring from an empty cup. And studies have shown that you do not take good care of your patients if you are not taking good care of yourself. That means exercise, eat right, get enough sleep, go to the beach and get rejuvenated. Take time to go to the doctor when you're not feeling good. Don't show up to work when you're sick. All of those things are important to taking care of yourself so that you can be a good leader and you can work on the culture of your team.
So we talked before, as we always say, and in the military, if you get dehydrated because you didn't drink the water that was provided to you, or you get a sunburn, those could be potentially punishable offenses because you didn't take care of yourself and you're impacting your readiness to assist your group. So same thing in veterinary medicine. I mean, if you don't have the requisite skills, the requisite health, your patient base is going to be affected because you're not there to provide care at 100%.
And it doesn't just go into physical taking care of, it goes into mental. It goes into mental wellness. It goes into learning. Learning, practicing the drums. You're working on your cognitive skills, going to continuing education. I mean, we turned that trip to VMX into a vacation. I made it to Epcot twice during the Arts Festival, which is my favorite festival at Epcot. I'm a huge Disney freak. So we had the fun stuff. We had the relaxing stuff. We ate the junk, but we learned. And we did come back rejuvenated. Kelsey and Simon, my CVT and doctor, are talking about new anesthesia protocols, new pain management protocols. Ashley's talking about new wound management. Heidi is coming up with ways that we can better promote care credit and get people to get a little bit more on board with that. All these things, because we're learning, but we're also having fun. So I think it's important, right, that you have to, what did you say? When you're military, you are government property.
Are you practice property?
No, you're not practice property, but it's important that you take care of yourself. So I kind of briefly mentioned this before. So culture starts with leadership. Then it goes on to psychological safety. This goes back to the making mistakes. I make mistakes on a regular basis. My husband makes mistakes on a regular basis. And whenever we hire a new vet, he says to them, you are going to make mistakes. And I think vets and CPAs are probably very similar in the fact that you're very type A personality, perfectionists. And I mean, you have to be, right? Doing what you do, your job is to keep me out of jail. At least that's how I think of you. Is that your job?
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, good. I'm so glad you agree. But you need to make sure that all of that is, I don't want to say perfect, but basically, yes, right? Everything has to even out. Veterinarians, they feel like they have to be perfect. If a patient dies, it is a failure. If a case doesn't get better or a client leaves to go someplace else because they're fed up, they consider that a failure. My husband says to every new vet, you are going to make mistakes and you can talk to me about it because I've already made them. And he's very open about stupid mistakes that he made when he first graduated so that they don't feel alone. And there isn't a vet that works for us now that has not called us at some point in time in tears, either over a patient or over a client. And we talk to them because it's okay. And maybe you did make a mistake. Maybe you didn't and they just perceive it as a mistake. It doesn't matter. Let's talk about it. And it's okay. And that is psychological safety, knowing that it is okay to fail and to learn from it. And this isn't just with your vets. This isn't just with your leadership team. This is with your whole team. They need to know that it's okay to make mistakes, and that's where you're going to learn. The other thing with regards to psychological safety, assume good intent. Now, my example of this is when you're driving and someone cuts you off, they probably did not mean to do it. They didn't wake up and say, I am going to screw Jenny over today and I am going to cut her off. But what they're doing is they weren't paying attention and, oh, I didn't even see you there. Mark has a different story.
No, actually, when I went up to visit you once in Deerfield, I cut somebody off inadvertently and they lost their mind. I remember it was a plumber truck and I felt so bad about it. And I'm like, uh-oh, they're going to follow me to Jenny's and yell at Jenny. They didn't.
But in Massachusetts, some people will cut you off and glare at you because they know what they're doing.
It's a sport in Massachusetts.
In normal places, it's exactly like Mark said. He didn't mean to cut that plumber off. We don't mean to. We're not paying attention. And it's the same thing in your workplace, right? I went to Megan Brashear did a talk on assume good intent. She is a certified vet tech and she's in charge of all of the veterinary technicians. I want to say at Purdue. I'm not 100% positive about that. But anyways, so she's like big wig, right? She says she used to walk in after an overnight shift and look at an IV that was placed in an animal. And the IV is like half hanging out. It's not where it should be. It's not taped in properly. And she would get mad, right? Because, okay, we have to replace this IV. Like, this is not going to work. But then she'd stop, take a moment and say, okay, when this animal came in, it was probably dehydrated. They couldn't find a vein or the animal was like fractious and they were just trying to get the IV in. And here we are. The IV is still working and the animal is alive. Yay! Like that's a win. They didn't in the middle of the night place that IV and say, oh, Megan's going to come in and she's going to be so mad. And yeah, we're really screwing this up on purpose. They're not. You don't know the situation. So you always need to assume good intent. And if you assume good intent as a leader and you focus on that, your team is going to assume good intent of each other and of you as a leader. Like COVID is a great example, right? The decisions that we had to make during COVID. Yes, I want you to fully gown up, put on your N95, put on another mask over top of that and a face shield so that you can't breathe. You're hot. You're miserable. And now I want you to walk out and get a dog out of a car and they're going to go bonkers, right? Because they don't want to come out of their car. And you look like the big guys from ET that gave every child nightmares. I didn't make that decision because I wanted to torture you. I made that decision as a practice owner and a leader because I need to keep you safe. And we only knew what we knew at that time. So assume good intent. And if you assume good intent, they will assume good intent.
Now, if they've had a poor history of good intent, they had good intent and they were blamed for something, and that may have been done repeatedly, then maybe they have PTSD about their actions going forward, and they're always going to be scared. So that also factors into leadership and changing your culture, but recognizing what you've done in the past and making amends and going into the future with a more positive outlook.
I think you're right. It's work. What we're talking about today is work, and it is hard work. It is not easy work. It is not something that, okay, take porcupine quills, right? You knock the dog out, you take the porcupine quills out, the dog wakes up, A-okay, we're good to go. This is not that kind of work. This is seriously hard, difficult work that is going to take time. And if you have not had a psychologically safe work environment for your team up until this point, it is going to take a lot of work to get there. A lot of gentle reminding, a lot of saying to people, hey, assume good intent. Maybe you make posters that say assume good intent and put them everywhere around your practice. So it's a constant reminder. You talk about it at your team meetings. You throw affirmations out there on Slack because that's how you communicate with your team and say, assume good intent. It is a constant reminder and not just saying the words, what do they mean? And then when somebody complains, yes, that they didn't clean out that kennel and you come in the next morning and the kennel needs to be cleaned, assume good intent. They had to leave. They were late already for an appointment. They didn't leave that dirty blanket there for you to take care of just because they don't like you. Assume good intent. And that it's hard work. It's going to be really hard work, but it's going to be worth it in the end. So psychological safety, right? It's okay to make mistakes. You're going to assume good intent. You're going to listen to each other because that's part of the psychological safety is actually listening to one another. You're going to be allowed to be who you are and be accepted. And this is a big thing with regards to diversity, with regards to different people within the veterinary industry. There are a lot of talks on this at BMX. That we have different religious beliefs, different skin color, different body type, LGBTQ community members, all of this, everybody needs to be welcomed and okay to be them. And it's very important if anybody does not feel accepted and welcomed by the team, then it is not a psychologically safe place for them. And no matter what you do with your culture, it is not going to affect them because they don't feel safe. They now, as Brené Brown says, are covered in armor so thick that they cannot be authentic and they cannot be their real self. And you will not have a good team. So it's very, very important that there is training out there for this. There's training out there. One of the talks that I went to talked about everybody going through mental health first aid, learning how to tell if your teammates are okay. Mentally, that's something that the whole team can do and learn how to be inclusive. You can do, we've talked about personality profiling, learning how to communicate with people who are different from you. That's a way to be inclusive. All of this stuff, but you have to be okay being who you are and be accepted in order to feel psychologically safe within your workplace. So I think that's very important.
If you walk around VMX, it's kind of like the airport. There are so many different people looking, acting, interacting. I mean, it's kind of fantastic. If you go online and you look at a CPA firm website, everybody looks the same. But if you go to VMX, I just love walking the exhibit show floor because the variety of people that you see, it's crazy. It's great.
It is absolutely beautiful. And it's getting even more diverse. And I think that's important. They give you the little ribbons to put on your badges. And I put one of the ribbons on that said my pronouns are she, her, hers. The fact that you're even talking about pronouns, that's accepting. That's helping people who have different pronouns, who identify differently, either gender or sexuality. It just helps make them feel welcome. And it's so simple. It's easy things like that. We are starting to see more different skin color, which I think is fantastic. Instead of, you're right, when you said CPAs, all I can think of is white old men.
Well, in most of my talks, I talk about old white guys. And there's a lot of women in the profession as well. But everybody kind of looks like the same type. They went through that process and they become a CPA to look the same.
Do they hand out your suits when you graduate? Here's your dark blue or black suit.
Blue or gray with white shirts. That was basically required uniform, and it slowly loosened up over time. Then you could do business casual on Fridays.
Ooh.
And now, with everybody working at home, really doesn't matter anymore.
Okay, so this goes back to culture, right? So it starts with leadership. You have to make sure you're psychologically safe. Now, we go back to what Mark was talking about, right? You're 10 years in, your culture is a hot dumpster fire, and you want to start changing it. You've talked about openly owning up to the mistakes that you've made as a leader. You've had these hard conversations. You're being open. You're being honest. You are making a psychologically safe place. You've had a conversation with the team. You're going through training on that. How are we going to make this a psychologically safe place? Now you got to get buy-in from the team. How do you do that?
You said mistakes. It may not be mistakes. It may be you had inadequacies in your skill sets of whatever, being authentic, hiring the right people. I mean, some people, it's not in their wheelhouse. They want to do a good job. They want to do that perfectly, and they don't. Whether they can't read people, they can't understand people, maybe people that don't have great executive functioning, they could have a touch of autism. Who knows? Can't read body language, can't read verbal cues. I mean, best of intentions, but just can't put it out there and do the best job relating to people.
You only know what you know. This goes back to COVID, right? Like, we were making changes every day, every week, because we only knew what we knew. When I started my practice 16 years ago, I only knew what I knew. And then I went out and I tried to learn, and I took human resource courses, and I took financial courses, and I took practice management courses and communication courses, and I've continued to learn. I am not the same person that I was 16 years ago. I'm not. And I hope that I'm better. I'm better at delegating, I'll tell you that. I don't feel the need to do everything myself. And because I delegate, because my team has autonomy, I have their buy-in on our culture, because they know that their opinions matter, that I'm going to listen to them, that I'm going to ask them for their opinions. And I don't send my team to these conferences for them to come back with all these great ideas for me to say, we've tried that before, we're not going to do it again. I'm going to listen, because maybe there's something new. And that's how you get their buy-in. You only know what you know. And so you're honest about that. You're right. I said mistakes. It's not necessarily mistakes. But I've learned, I've grown. I now realize that this is a better way to do it. I need your help with this. But if you don't include your team, if you don't ask for them to help you, if you don't ask their opinions and listen, you're never going to get their buy-in. Now, this goes back. This is why you have to make it a psychologically safe place first, because they're not going to give you their opinions if it's not psychologically safe. I love that every time I talk to my team, everything's fine. It's fine, Jenny. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine. And then I'll have one team member come up and they're like, oh my God, everybody hates it here. All they do is complain to me about it. And I'm like, really? Because they don't say a word to me. I'm not saying that we don't have a psychologically safe place. I think that we do. My team will come up to me and talk to me about bigger problems, but they also know that I'm going to hold them accountable for the little one. If somebody comes in and says, well, I have an issue with this, my response is going to be, okay, well, how do you think we should fix that? So if they don't have a solution, they're probably not going to come to me, and they're just going to complain, because complaining doesn't get anybody anywhere. So I will ask them for their opinions, but I'm also going to ask them to help come up with the solution. That gives them autonomy. I'm going to trust them to help come up with the solutions. They may work, they may not work. Maybe we have to tweak them, but that's how you get their buy-in. You have the tough conversations and you include them in the solution. If all you're going to do is bitch and complain, I don't have time for it. You don't have time for it. Nobody has time for it, because it doesn't do anything to help your practice. And you have to be very clear about that when you're communicating. So you have to ask for help. You have to get examples. You have to try out ideas. You have to make it okay to make mistakes and fail, because we're going to learn from them. That's how you get your team buy-in, on changing your culture if you've been in it for 10 years and you're trying to pour water on your dumpster fire. So the other part of this, and we've kind of mentioned this already, is that it takes time. You cannot flip a 180 in 0.01 second. It's not going to work. One of the trainers that I follow, Autumn Calabrese, was talking about this. She's a Beachbody trainer. And she was talking about the fact that January 1st, right, we're making a New Year's resolution. We're going to be healthy. So I am going to start today drinking 1 gallon of water, getting 8 hours of sleep, working out for an hour every day, and not just working out, but like working out. I'm going to throw some weights around. I'm going to do some cardio. I'm going to feel like I'm going to die. And I'm going to do all of these things in one day. I'm going to, I don't know, there's all these things and I'm going to do it all right now. And they fail and they don't follow through. And 6 months later, they're back to eating Oreos, sitting in front of the TV. And it's because we're trying to make this huge shift just like that. If you're changing your culture, it's going to take time. And I'm talking years of time. Veterinary professionals are some of the least patient people I have ever met in my life. We want change. We want change now. It's not going to happen that way. Are CPAs that way?
They're resistant to change.
I think humans are resistant to change.
Change is good until it isn't.
And change for the sake of change is not good.
Right.
There has to be a purpose behind this. What's your why? Why are we doing this? We're doing this because I'm tired of firing people. We're doing this because I'm tired of this toxic work environment. We're doing this because we have too high a turnover rate. We're doing this because our profit is too low. And I want to give you all raises. And I can't give you raises if we don't have profit. But we can't have profit if we don't have a team that works together well. Why are we doing this? Include your team in that. But know it's going to take time. You can't expect change overnight.
It's kind of like contributing to a 401k in every paycheck. If you're putting $25 away per pay period, it's kind of a small little change. If you had to do a whole year's worth of 401k contributions in one pay period, it'd be really painful.
You wouldn't get paid. There would be nothing to live on. You're not paying for your groceries, your eggs that are $10 a dozen.
Well, that's why I say, like the book Atomic Habits, you can't have 100% change instantly. It's really small, little, insignificant changes that can add up over time to be a massive change.
And that's how, when you're looking at your culture and you're including your team and you're working on making a psychologically safe workplace, you have to do it small increments at a time. And you love SMART goals. What is SMART goals again?
Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based.
So small changes. What are we going to start with? We're going to start with a team meeting. I'm going to have this team meeting on this date. I am going to state, here's what we've done. Here's what my goals are, what we're going to move forward. I'm going to ask each of my team members to let me know what is one thing I can do to support them, or what is one concern they have. I can measure how many of my team members get that back to me. I'm going to give them a time limit on when they need to get that back to me. And then we're going to have another meeting and we're going to go from there. We're going to take those concerns. We're going to talk about them. I'm going to take their suggestions on how that I can support them. And we're going to talk about them. But we're going to do everything very specifically. We're going to measure how much buy-in we have. And if at any point in time, it's not working anymore, we got to go back and figure out why. But have these small goals. What was that? Atomic Habits? I haven't read that one.
They could have probably had a book of 10 pages long, but...
Well, I think that's a lot of books, right? Is they kind of go over things over and over again. But what do you have to hear something 7 times in order for it to sink in?
It's the 1% change. Those small changes add up over time in a short period of time. And change not for the sake of change.
Atomic Habits by James Clear. It makes sense, right? If you improve 1% every day for a year, by the end of the year, you're 365% better than you were. And it's 1%. You talked about focusing on that 0.01% of the things that we do wrong. But how often do we catch ourselves doing something right? Maybe we should start paying attention to that. But understand that this whole process is going to take time and it's in very small increments. So SMART goals, do those. And then the last part about culture, so we've talked about this, starts with leadership, psychological safety within your workplace, getting buy-in from the team, takes time, so you have to be patient, and it's always a work in progress. You are never going to say, my workplace is perfect. Mine's pretty good. You go to these conferences, and I come home, and I'm like, we don't have mountains to overcome. We don't even have like hills to overcome. We have grassy knolls. Like we have just little tiny things. And now my team may think they're mountains because some of them, they've only ever worked here. So they only know here. But we're nitpicking at little stuff because my team is a very healthy team. Like we're good and we take care of each other and we don't have a lot of turnover. And my team, even though one of my team members said it took her 5 years to come into my office because she was scared of me. And I'm like, what? And she's like, now she's the one who wants to go get matching tattoos. So we've come a long way. But it's constantly work in progress. You can constantly change. You can constantly learn exactly what you said, Mark. You only know what you know. So learn. You talked about not being able to read emotions. Emotional intelligence 2.0, that's another one. Brené Brown's really big in emotional intelligence. You hear all of these people talk about emotional intelligence. Learn about it. Do your personality profile so you learn how to communicate better with that person who's very different from you. Different isn't bad. It's just different. That's what makes it beautiful. Walking around VMX, that's what makes it beautiful. That there is so many different types of people.
If you want a good read, McKinsey & Company has a newsletter that they publish. They published one this week. Mental health is the first step, a broader approach to employee well-being. It's a deeper dive into how companies across the U.S. are examining mental health and emotional health. And I like stealing ideas. I mean, borrowing ideas from everybody. So they're a national consulting firm. Definitely companies are investing more in mental health, or at least talking about it, which is the first step. So take a read there. There's a lot of great data out there.
Where does it come from?
McKinsey.
McKinsey. And so you just look up McKinsey.
McKinsey.com. McKinsey.com.
There's so much information out there. We can always learn. We can always be better. And this goes into talking to our team members constantly and figuring out what they need. Dave Nickel asks his team, I think he said quarterly, he has them fill out anonymous employee questionnaires. How do you think we're doing? What do we need to work on? So that things don't become mountains, so that they can stay grassy knolls. But if you don't know about them, which you might not know as a leader, right? You've delegated, you're not doing everything on your own. We've talked about this. We're delegating. And so we might not know all of the things. But if you routinely ask your team for their opinion and you give them a safe place to give you that information, then you can catch these problems before they become big. And you're sitting down and you're having your regular reviews and you're doing all of these things, right? But you're taking care of your team. The biggest thing out of this is if you are generous with your team, if you take care of your team, they're going to take care of your patients. They're going to take care of your clients. And you're going to have a good culture. They're going to take care of each other. But you've got to be honest. You've got to be open. And you have to have hard conversations.
And good conversations.
Good conversations. Hard is not bad. What did you say? You would just put your head in the sand.
Sometimes that's why I delegate.
If you're a practice owner and you say, I'm going to put my head in the sand and I'm going to make this somebody else's problem. But you haven't delegated who's going to handle that problem. It's just going to become a dumpster fire, a big one. So we hope that this has been helpful. And I do think that if you take the time and you focus on your culture, it takes care of so many other problems. Then you're just dealing with the little stuff. The big stuff always is going to come down to your culture. And your number one thing has to be, why are you doing this? What's your why? What's your why? You know what? We've never talked about that, Mark. What's your why? Why did you want to do the podcast?
Just the podcast?
Yes. I want to know why we wanted to do the podcast. I know why I did it.
To be famous.
Is that for me or for you?
Well, you wanted to be famous.
I always want to be famous.
We have listeners in 24 countries.
Oh, that's cool. Regardless of fame and fortune, the fortune that comes with this, that we don't get paid for any of it. My reason for wanting to do the podcast was you and I were talking. We were at VMX. I was probably skipping a class because that's what I do. We were talking about the fact that people were overwhelmed owning a business. And your wife, Kathy, who I love, was like, Jenny, you have so much information. You should talk to people. I love what I do. I love the veterinary industry. Veterinary people are my people with all their quirks and all their weirdness and all their inappropriate conversations at dinner and all of those things. Veterinary people are my people. And I want them to love this profession as much as I do. And I want them to know that they're not alone. And so when you came up with this idea to do this podcast, I wanted to do it because that's why. I wanted to help reach as many people as we could to let them know that they're not alone. To give them actual things that they can do and think about to make their businesses better so that they're not overwhelmed and they can find their joy in the practice again.
I mean, that's probably 100% of why I started it, because we talk to people all the time, and I actually talked to a potential client yesterday, and her husband's CPA, who does his business, was going to do her vet practice because it's just a tax return. And I'm like, it's not just a tax return. They said, it's the conversations we have and just you asking questions that you don't have anybody else to ask. And oh, by the way, your husband's CPA kind of minimized your role in this whole thing where someday you're going to have a multi-million dollar venture. And why shouldn't you be getting the best advice and not feeling scared or embarrassed about asking a question and them not knowing and us knowing? Why not get the right answer up front? So we get that all the time where people think they're going to get the right advice somewhere else and they're not going to the right source. So whether that applies to taxes, accounting, culture, HR, operations, medicine, get the right advice.
Social media is not the place to get that advice. People post stuff on social media and they're like, what does everybody think of this? And I'm like, you're asking complete strangers who might not have any idea or who have had one bad reaction and that's what they're going to base their comment on. Social media is not the place. It's a great place to catch up with high school friends. Not a great place for medical advice, business advice, tax advice. No. So we hope that we've helped you some. We hope that we've given you some things to think about. We're looking forward to really good. This is like our third season now. So we're looking forward to a really good third season with more interviews with guests. If you have ideas you'd like us to discuss, we are on Facebook. We are on Instagram, The Veterinary Survival Show. You can reach out to me at my email, which is csuvet@yahoo.com. Mark, how can they get in touch with you?
Go to our website, McGaughan Schwadron CPAs.
But you had the easier way.
MCG4, the number 4, DVMs.com.
Please reach out. We love to hear from people. I love when our listeners reach out and let us know what they're thinking. Because again, if we don't know it's a problem, we can't help fix it. So please reach out. Please let us know what you're thinking and like us, subscribe, leave reviews wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'll catch you at the next episode.
Have a great day.